I've never been one that was always like, this is the role I want to do and this is the job I want to do. I was always clear on the work I wanted to do. On my very first application, I think even when I started working in the State Department in Illinois and then in Teach for America, there was a line that has been on every application that I've done when I've been applying for something, and it's, I wanted to impact change from the classroom to the Capitol. I didn't know what role that was going to be, but I knew that if we could change what was happening in our schools and really create access, opportunity, high quality instruction in some of our most challenging contexts that can impact Black and brown kids, we could change the world and we could change what is happening in our neighborhoods. And I fundamentally and still believe in that. That has been my driving core.
Welcome everyone to the Change Starts Here podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Odom. And this week I am excited to have on the show my friend of, almost 20 years we talked about on the podcast, about 20 years, the CEO of the Cleveland Metropolitan School District, Mr. Warren Moore, or Dr. Gosh, can't even do that with him, Dr. Warren Morgan. Dr. Morgan is someone I have known since he was a first year teacher in the St. Louis Public Schools. And watching his journey from afar, first thing that you notice is he is a servant leader to the nth degree. He is someone who sees everyone who's around him, who loves and serves everyone who's around him. And it's just an honor to have him on the podcast. We dive into a little bit about his background, you know, for everywhere from teaching in St. Louis Public to being a principal in Chicago Public Schools to his time as a White House fellow to, I don't think we spent much time about his Indianapolis stop, although that was definitely impactful for him. And now his time as the CEO of the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. We talk about leadership. We talk about building culture in his schools. We talk about how to get, you know, academic performance in his schools. And we just, I don't know, I guess to say just spend time catching up. He's someone that I just think the world of. And so the fact that he made time in the middle of a crazy week at a crazy time of his school year to talk to us was just awesome. So as always, if you're a subscriber, thank you for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed, please subscribe button. It helps us continue to make impact and growth internally so we can continue to produce more content for you all. But ultimately, what's most important to me is you listen. If you hear anything Dr. Morgan says that impacts you, that impacts people around you, that could inspire people around you, please share this interview with them, because I think it's something that you'll see pretty quickly where his heart is for others. So as always, thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast. Thank you so much for making time in the middle of your crazy day, crazy busy day, to come talk to us. I appreciate you joining us.
Oh man, I'm so happy to be here and just a great chance to catch up. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, Warren, I feel like, you know, there's people that you meet. You meet a lot of people, but, you know, I remember meeting you, God, it feels like almost 20 years ago. And I mean, it's not, maybe 15, we'll call it.
It was about 20.
But, yeah, we're getting there, but like, I feel like it's rare that I would say this, but like you were destined to lead people, in a really powerful way. And it's not about ego. It's about the way you love, the way you connect, and the way you serve. And so I'm just so excited to talk to you today about your latest opportunity. So if you could, before we get into your journey, our favorite question to start every interview is, who are you and what do you love about what you do?
Oh man. Well, thank you for that. And before I answer that, I just want to say I'm just as honored to know you, and it was great to meet you along that journey, and just your amazing leadership. So thank you for your investment in my life. But of course, who I am, Warren Morgan. I currently serve as the CEO of Cleveland Metropolitan School District. And from the south suburbs of Chicago, you know, really what I love about the work I've done and just the places I've been, and I know I'll talk a little bit about that, is I've been in systems where I get a chance to impact students that grew up really relatively similar to me, with sometimes challenges that were stacked up against them. But it was opportunity, access, people believing in me, and also my faith that allows me to continue to overcome many trials and circumstances. And so that is just something that has reigned true to me and why I do the work that I do, because when I look at all of our kids, all of our beautiful kids that we serve here in Cleveland. We serve about 40,000 students, have about 6,500 staff members. But when I look at all of our beautiful kids, I just see the potential in them. And I know that they could do it too. So that is the work. And it's probably the thing I love most about the work is just really seeing the potential of our kids, seeing the growth and the opportunity to meet with so many incredible people. And the Cleveland community is just such a very active, engaged community where I get a chance to meet new people every day.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I've been privy to at least seeing half your story. So I'm curious, did you always know you wanted to go into education? Did you always believe or think that you wanted to be a principal, then a superintendent? Can you give us a little bit about what your life journey has been like up to this point?
Yeah, man. So the answer to that is twofold, because part of it is like, yes, I always knew I would be doing this. And then part of it is, no, I didn't. So the yes, where I would say I always wanted to do this was when I was a kid, I loved playing school. And my family could tell you this. When I played school on steroids, man. Like I created report cards for my siblings and the kids in the neighborhood. I had parent-teacher conferences. I was hosting it. Like, I was serious. I had my own grade book. So this was what I wanted to do. Because I did really well in school and growing up, in humble beginnings, black family, a lot of my parents, they told me, they were like, Warren, you do good in school. Education, which they don't believe this now. They totally support what I do, and it's just what they've learned. But they were like, educators don't make a lot of money. You could do so many different things. And so I went to college, and I was a pre-med major, and that's what I was going to school for. But it was my senior year of college where I was a student body president, and I had the opportunity to meet President Clinton when he came on campus, and then also George H.W. Bush when he came on campus, two separate occasions. And they both met me, and they got a chance to hear what I was doing as student body president. And they were like, medical school, you need to be thinking about policy and going into policy. And so that's what I did right after college. I worked on policy for the Illinois Senate and was working on education policy, which then through that, I was like, this connected to my ultimate why. I knew I always wanted to be a part of making change in urban education from the policy standpoint, but I also wanted to understand what was happening. And so from there, got into Teach for America, where I had the wonderful opportunity to teach both middle school and high school science in St. Louis. And then from there, my journey has been mainly in education, but also in some policy work at the federal level as well. So,
yeah, I'm curious. So you went from St. Louis to become a principal in Chicago, right? If I get this right, I'm going off my memory of just following you. At some point in there, I mean, I think you came back to St. Louis at that point, or maybe you didn't, but you were down back with us, executive director. But at some point, you were a White House fellow, and I'm just curious what you learned about. You worked for the Department of Education, so what lessons you took away that others could glean from that opportunity you had there?
Yeah, so to backtrack a little bit, and then I'll talk about the different stops I've made, but I've never been one that was always like, this is the role I want to do, and this is the job I want to do. But I was always clear on the work I wanted to do, and on my very first application, I think even when I started working in the State Department in Illinois and then in Teach for America, there was a line that has been on every application that I've done when I've been applying for something. And it's, I wanted to impact change from the classroom to the Capitol. I didn't know what role that was going to be, but I knew that if we could change what was happening in our schools and really create access, opportunity, high quality instruction in some of our most challenging contexts that can impact Black and brown kids, we could change the world and we could change what is happening in our neighborhoods. And I fundamentally and still believe in that. That has been my driving core. But from there, I did Teach for America in St. Louis, went back to Chicago to get my doctorate. And from there, I was a high school principal on the west side of Chicago, one of the most challenging contexts, really similar to this to the school I led in St. Louis, but just really challenging context. And took that school. We were a school that had been on probation, and really working with the team, working to get people on, at the school that really believed in our kids and seeing what we could do, and moved that school to a school that made significant improvement. We moved to a level two designation, which at that time was a school in good standing with Chicago Public Schools. So I saw what could happen with a clear turnaround strategy. And from there, I got actually recruited to come to Cleveland. So I actually worked in Cleveland Metropolitan School District, where I was a network superintendent supervising all the turnaround schools, or a part of the turnaround schools here. And I would have never thought that I would be back here in this district now leading it. But at that time, getting a chance to lead other leaders, and that is from that work, that's where I went to the White House and got a chance to do this work at a federal level. So it just shows that if your why is really clear and the work you really want to do, it doesn't matter which role you're doing, you're still impacting this change that's really driven by your why.
Well, one question I have is that, you know, it's easy, at least for me, I'll speak for me, not other folks, but it's easy for me thinking about, you know, as a district leader or a school leader or even a teacher, to just kind of think, you know, Department of Education, federal, like, I don't really care. I'm not going to get interested in what they do. What would you say are the most important functions that the federal DOE, how they impact us and how they can help us as leaders within districts or schools?
Yeah. So the Federal Department of Education presents a framework for local entities to drive educational change within their community. And so the great thing about working at the Department of Ed and working with programs in the White House and coordinating with the White House was creating the conditions that enabled state departments to drive the policy that needs to happen in their states, and also for district leaders to create those enabling conditions. And so it was really high level. It was really broad. I remember when I was a White House fellow working on the Native Community Youth Project grant. And it was the very first time that I had a chance to work with Native communities and reservations, and learning that the issues on reservations were so similar to the issues that we were dealing with in Chicago, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Cleveland. Like, they are the exact same issues and the challenges. And so being able to hear innovations and strategies that were happening, there were lessons that I learned and nuggets that I gleaned to think, when I went back to the local level, how could I drive change at the local level? Now, one of the things I learned, not that I would never return at the federal level, I'm so much on the ground. Like, I want when thinking about a problem, I want to figure out, okay, how can we impact that change, like, right now? And at the federal level, you can do that, but it's so far removed. You're really creating the conditions, and you really set the context so that state departments or districts can really roll up their sleeves and say, this is the way the change needs to enact. So from my federal experience, I realized that my next step was I wanted to get back in the local community, because I felt like change was a lot more tangible at the local communities. And that's why I'm doing this work now locally.
Well, again, obviously I know you well, so I would say, for those who don't know you, I would say it's very clear that you love people and you love to build relationships and you love to be in people's presence. I mean, I wouldn't call you extroverted. You and I joke. No. We're both, what do we call it? Extrovert, introverts. So you're definitely introverts at heart. But when you're in the community, right? So you're leading a 40,000 person school district. You're in Indianapolis before this. How do you find ways to balance being in the central office and getting out into schools where the work's happening? How do you set your weeks up or your time up to make sure you can do that?
Yeah. So one of the things when I came on board, and I'm about 9 months into my role, I believe today is day 273 on the job.
But who's counting?
No one's counting. But when I first came into the job, I really prioritized doing a listen and learn tour and created a 100-day plan where I was going out into the communities doing coffee chats. I love coffee. So I wanted to set up these coffee chats in the community where I was just talking to parents, talking to community members, talking to staff members about what they really like in the system and what they wanted to change. And it was also a chance for people to get a chance to know me. I also structured it in a way, because I am an introvert, I do better in really intimate settings. And so even though we did some larger town halls, for me, it was really, I felt really at home when I got a chance to just talk to people one-on-one, have a cup of coffee, get a chance to learn more about them and just talk with them. And that was a way for me to really get a chance to meet people, get out into the community. I also have a goal that I'm getting into all of the schools, and we have 112 programs within our district. And right now, you know, almost at the end of the school year, I'm coming up on having been in almost all of our schools. I will be in all of our schools by the end of the year, but really just setting up those goals to say, this is what we're going to do. I want to get a feel for what's happening in our schools and in our community. It just has that connection and that feel. And for me, the job is really hard. There are days it weighs really hard on you. You get criticism all the time, you know, in terms of what could be happening in the system or what you're not doing or how you say things and what you do. And it's a reminder to me that it's less about me and more about the work we can do together. So on those days that are really hard, those days that are really hard to get back up because you're facing a really tough decision or you're facing criticism, I remind myself of when I go into a school and a young kid, maybe even a young Black boy, runs up to me and it's like, oh my God, you know, there's a CEO of the district and he sees himself in me. Or a teacher that is like, you know, keep fighting the fight. You know, the work you're doing is making an impact. That's what gets me up in the morning. And so it's a reminder I need to get out in the field more to hear the stories, because this is who I do the work for. I'm a servant leader. It's not about me. Leaders come and go. It's about the work I'm doing to serve the community.
Yeah, I mean, that's who you've been since you were a teacher. And so if people haven't seen that yet in Cleveland, they will, just because you put one foot in front of the other and you're constantly trying to figure out how to serve and move people together versus it being the Warren Morgan show. So with that, you know, after your 100 days of deep conversations, and you and I are similar, my wife jokes, she can't take me anywhere because I can't work a room, right? I find one person, have a deep conversation. I can't ever get to the next because I get so fascinated with it. And so I know that you listen so well. What have you learned, and what's the vision? Where are you and your team trying to take Cleveland Public Schools from where they are today?
Yeah, so when we came out of the Listen and Learn tour, there were themes that I heard that allowed us to create our core values. And we came up with 5 core values. Our core values are inclusion, student and community focus, growth and learning, care and well-being, and excellence and achievement. So those are our core values. Really just thinking about that work has been based on the work that we've heard from our community. And just really focusing on our why and our priorities, they came from the things that we heard from the Listen and Learn tour. And so we heard about safety and not only within our schools, but we heard about it within the community. We also heard so much about excellence and achievement over time. People have said, you know, there's been growth, but our kids are still not leaving on grade level. They're not really graduating ready to tackle on college and career readiness. And these were things that the community shared. Our educators shared deeply about the investment that they want made into them. And so when we think about one of our strategic priorities, it's really around educator learning. Our strategic priorities are around a safe and engaged culture, educator learning, a strong and rigorous instructional culture, a coherent central system, and then an engaged community. So not that it's really important, but those were we have our core values and our strategic priorities that we got from our community. And that's what our guiding light is moving forward. So on that Listen and Learn tour, I mean, we got thousands of pieces of feedback, and we had a team that looked at every piece of feedback. When you went to one of the Listen and Learn tour, you had to scan a QR code that asked questions about our core values. It asked, what do you want to see in the system? What do you want change? And we literally read all thousands of pieces of feedback to put together this report to come up with our core values, our strategic priorities, and also our goals. And so this is work that came from the community. Our board now is actually about to go back out to the community and say, what is resonating with you now that we've had almost a year of these, you know, core values, these strategic priorities, and what does the next phase of the work look like?
So when you think about, we've talked about this in St. Louis a few times, when you think about creating systematic change, obviously it takes people and humans. And so when you think about the right leaders, what are the attributes you're looking for, and what kind of philosophy are you hoping to find in your current leaders, as well as leaders who are listening, thinking about, should I come join this change that you have there?
Yeah, the first thing, I mean, and I talked about this already, really service. This job is hard, and all the work that we do in urban education, even if you're a teacher, even if you're a paraprofessional, I roll with our bus drivers. So one of the things I did in the Listen and Learn tour, because I heard from our bus drivers, they were like, it's hard with transportation and the routes that we're getting. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to come on a route with you. And so I remember in November, it was in the cold months. I got up really early, like 6 a.m., went to the bus depot and rode a route with our bus drivers, and also got a chance to see the experience that they were experiencing with our kids. And that job is challenging. Like I realize urban education, no matter what role you have, it is challenging. And so in order to get through day to day and come back to do this work, you have to have a servant's heart. And I am confident. I mean, you may have a couple of examples here or there. I'm confident, though, that everyone who has signed up to do this work here in Cleveland cares about our kid. They're here because they care about making change within in our community and our students. We may disagree on different issues, but they really care. And so that servant's attitude, that attitude of really care and compassion, you must have it to get through it because it's just too tough. There's nothing else keeping you there. And it's not like, you know, a lot of benefits and bonuses and a lot of flashy stuff that comes with our work. Our work is grindy. It's hard. It's challenging. And so you really have to have that servant mindset. I would also say the thing I look for is humility. And it is something that I've had to learn over time. Because in a role, particularly in my role, where you're constantly receiving feedback, constantly, it's never enough because there's more work to do. You can't take it personally. You can't take yourself too seriously. And you have to say, okay, what else can we do? Even when you get the hardest, you know, toughest criticism. Tonight's one of our board meetings and it's a public comment. So I guarantee you, you know, I'm going to be sitting up there and there's going to be people that are upset and frustrated. And behind that, you have to listen and say, okay, that happened. What else can we do? How can we move forward? And so those are things that I think I look for in leaders when we're saying to come and do this work. And the final thing I would say, just from a tactical standpoint, is you have to have a data mindset. You have to be data driven. In this work where you're constantly trying to make improvements, we can't always go on our feelings. We have to go based on what is fact and the work that we're actually putting out there and the results that we're doing. If you're not tracking the progress, if you're not tracking your strategy, you're going to always be spinning your wheels and not really knowing where progress is happening. And so you have to have that data-driven mindset.
That's great. And you may have just answered that there, because I think about with any impact, right? I think about leadership. So it's the people building the culture, which is for staff and students and families and community, and then focus on the academics, right? So that second piece may have some similar answers here, but I think about building great cultures, right? So when you think about the schools you're walking into or your communities are walking into, you talked about safety. What other key attributes are when you think about the high performing schools? Think about the schools that you built from, you know, potentially failing to greatness. What are you seeing in the staff and student cultures of those buildings?
Yeah, so the things I'm seeing in those communities, and even just for any leader that is thinking about really enacting change, you have to have a plan. You have to have a roadmap. And so one of the things when I talked about when coming in, taking everything from the Listen and Learn tour, creating our core values, creating our strategic priorities, creating goals, you have a roadmap of where you're going. And from there are different strategies that you have connected to, you know, everything. And so in those communities, in those schools, in those organizations that are high performing, you see a plan, you see a roadmap, you see where there are goals. You also see where progress is being tracked. One of the tools that I've utilized along the way, and we're getting our performance management structure set up here in Cleveland, is a performance management system where leaders are being held accountable for the plans that we said we were going to do. So there is a list of, you know, five things that we said in the year we were going to do to impact, let's say, attendance. And we have those strategies out. We map them out month by month with KPIs attached to it. Performance management is taking step backs point in times in the year to say where we are relative to what we said we were going to do and what do we need to adjust to do that. So high performing cultures are really built on really strong values, but also high levels of execution and implementation around a strategy or a plan. And there are many ways that plans can look like. You know, I know that, you know, there are some leaders that are super hyper-focused and really organized with lots of spreadsheets, and that works for them in terms of implementation of a plan. And there are others that are really driven by people. So they're constantly meeting with them to get that feedback. It doesn't matter how it looks like, but you have to have a plan and you have to have a way of actually getting that feedback and tracking it.
Yeah, I think I love that you recognize that there are different types of people, right? Yeah. Folks who are, I always say it's like head and heart. And it doesn't mean that people that I think with the head don't have a heart, or the heart don't have a head, but it's kind of what you lead out of, right? And so you're just trying to build communities that have that. And so within that, right? So you've got, you know, we've dealt with our own opportunities with St. Louis Public Schools and the difficulty, and even Chicago, I'm sure. There's always a union challenge per se from the outsider's lens, right? And so I know that you care deeply about every one of your teachers you've ever worked with. And so how do you make sure that you, from where you sit, that you're going taking care of your staff? Because I know you talk about servants, servant leadership, that's what you do. So how do you show that? How do you live that out from where you are?
Yeah, I think it's really important to hear what is happening on the ground level. And I will say, you know, and you know this from being a teacher, teaching is tough, especially in the context of, that we teach in. And even when we talk about what more needs to happen for our students, if we're not talking about what we're doing for our teachers, then we're not going to be able to achieve our goals. You know, culture will eat strategy for breakfast. So if you do not have a strong culture, if you're not feeding the teachers, they will eat the students, you know? So it's like all of these different things you learn over time. And so it is really important. And so when working with our teachers union here, I want to hear the issues, and there are lots of them. I've heard a lot of challenges that we have, and we have to continue to still do it. And I want to be a part of solutions. So one of the things I'm really big on is like, I want to hear the problem, but what are some solutions that we can do to really enact this change, which is why when I think of one of our core values, it's really around care and well-being, because if we're not really thinking about care, not only from our students, but also for our staff, we're not going to be able to grow. Our teachers union actually just did a survey to survey all of our teachers and paraprofessionals to really understand what are some of the issues that are on the ground. And it was just really enlightening for me to see some of those challenges. And then I talked with her to say, hey, what can we do to really move forward? I want to be a part of the solutions as we're thinking about that.
You know, with that, what do you think the biggest challenges are that you're trying to help your staff with right now, right? That they've asked for, that you guys are trying to attack really quickly?
Coming in, I'll tell you the context I've walked into as the leader of CMSD. We've been the recipient of ESSER dollars over the past 3 years, as every district has. And this is the year that ESSER dollars go away. So I'm walking in at the tail end of ESSER, and we got nearly $500 million in ESSER funds. So I've had to come in and make budget cuts. Over $168 million in budget cuts over 2 years. What I did, though, was I came in with three C's. I said, I care about clarity, coherence, and the instructional core. And because I care about the instructional core, I said I was not going to touch schools. And all of our cuts we were going to do, we were not going to be cutting from schools. We were going to keep our student base and our school-based budgeting pool flat and keep it the same. What that meant, though, is we're making cuts at the central office. So those are some challenges we've had to make. There are some programs we've had to cut, whether that is, some programs that were expanded during ESSER and or during the COVID relief time. We've had to make some cuts. So those are some challenges I'm hearing. I'm also hearing the other challenge we've had is we had to negotiate. We're in the midst of negotiations for all 9 of our union contracts. And then potentially needing to think about go out to our community for an ask on what their investment could look like to sustain funding within the district. So all of these things we're navigating within year one of me walking in. And that's challenging because you're making decisions and needing to ask for support all at the same time, still trying to build relationships. But what I have tried to do in this time is really be clear on the investment we're trying to do in schools and with our teaching staff. Also in the midst of negotiations, even though we're making budget cuts, think about areas that we haven't been able to invest in staff around pay. So some of the cuts we've had to do have had to be more aggressive so that we can put some areas of emphasis like for our paraprofessionals and different areas like that. So these are things that we're really focused on. And we're not done with negotiations, or am I talking about the specifics of negotiations, but these are just the things that are top of mind for me as I think about ways we can really support our community. And then working with our mayor's office and the city on continued safety and security. So these are areas that we're invested in and that we've heard challenges.
Yeah. And I ask that because obviously I've had the privilege to know you for about 20 years and I know your heart. But once you get in that seat of superintendent, you know, one, it's impossible for everybody to spend time with you, especially being the introverts that we are. But two, even if they could spend time with you, they may not get to see all the sides of you. And so I think it's just important to have anybody who's listening understand, you know, just who they're working with and where your mindset is all the time, which is about the people. It's not about you. It's about the people who are on the front lines.
Yeah. And one thing I'll also say with that, because we're like in this week, this is the week for central office staff where we have to announce impacts. And it is tough. I mean, every morning I wake up and when I go to bed at night, it just weighs on me because there are people who I know will not be along with us. And that is tough. But I will say this, and this is from personal experience. And I'll say it from just my faith perspective. Everything happens for a reason. And we could take the most challenging situation and it can work out for our good. And so if I could speak to those people that may not be with us, one, it doesn't mean that they will never be with us again. There's always an opportunity. But I am standing in agreement with all of those people that this situation will work out for their good, even if it is challenging. And we're working with our team to figure out ways that we can provide support during this time so that there's transitional support. But I want people to know that I stand with them. It is tough. There's always sunshine at the end of a cloudy day. So
that's awesome, man. Yeah, we've gone through this before with the SIG grants, Race to the Top. It's like when there's a influx of money, it's awesome. But there's definitely on the flip side of that, there can be a lot of pain. And I know that the grants and the way the dollars are allocated, they generally try to learn from the last round of money, but it still impacts so many people. And yeah. So I just think it's important that people know your heart in the midst of having to make tough challenges.
Yeah.
Before I get to the last rapid fire questions, I'm just curious, when you think about, you know, 4 years, 5 years from now, from your team's leadership, what's going to look different in Cleveland to you? Like what will the system be like as people are coming to visit or think about sending their kids there?
Yeah. The biggest thing I'm focused on, aside of all these operational things that I said we have to get through right now, balancing the budget and making sure we have everything focused, we're really focusing on making sure that all kids in the system, no matter where they live, no matter what they look like, no matter their background, has access to the same high quality programs. In our system right now, we have some of the highest performing schools in the state. And we have also some of the worst performing schools within the state. And, you know, you could already probably guess what some of our schools look like that are the highest performing and what access they have, whether you have to test to get into them or not, versus the ones that don't. And when I look at that, I'm like, I'm in charge of the same system that maybe has some of the best resources and the best world-class education. And also, you know, a school that may not be able to provide music or art or Algebra 1 to kids. Mm. And so the legacy I want my administration focused on is, one, creating a system where no matter where you live, you have access to the best programs. You no longer have to choose to go to a school that may be an hour away from you, from you. You can go to a school within your neighborhood and still get Algebra 1 if you're in eighth grade, or still have access to band or music, or have access to STEM programs. And that is something I know just from hearing from our community, people are bought into. The execution of that will definitely take, it'll take work. It'll take continued stakeholder engagement, because this is also a community that has built the wonderful district we have now. And what I see in terms of this work, it's not upending any of the work that's happened to date. It's furthering this work and creating more access for our kids. So that is what will look and feel different. And I'm just so excited and I can't wait. Even the challenges we have now, I can't wait to be able to look and say, hey, this is what we've been able to do. And it was all worth it because our kids are in a much better place right now.
That's awesome. Well, my hope is, as people listen to this, there are some folks out there who might be at the right time in their life to consider jumping on your administration somewhere, whether it's at the district or at the school level or teaching, just to be a part of that. Because I don't know, man, you know, this is not gaslighting you. This is what I've told you since the first day we met. So I'm just excited to see what you have there. So before I get you get back on your day, let's go through the rapid fire questions. Okay. First question is, what's a habit or discipline you utilize on a daily or weekly basis to help you be the best version of yourself?
Yeah. So start every morning with a devotion and a workout or a run. I'm big on running. I love running. But if I can't get out to do a run, I do a workout, and that's how I get my day started. If I don't do that, days that I don't do it, my day is bad.
Yeah, totally agree. All right. What's a book that you've, or you can have multiple books. I don't want to put too much pressure on one book, but what's a book that you've read that you'd like others who are in educational leadership to read?
There was one that I like. It's a relatively short read, but I remember when I was a principal supervisor, I did it with my principals, and it's called True North. And it's really about finding your true north and what makes you uniquely you, tapping into that because no one else can do it better than you. And like that is like your superpower as a leader. And so I love that book, True North. I would recommend that.
Where is he at right here? This is Luke. My 10-year-old is obsessed, as you know. Being in St. Louis, we have baseball, so it's the Cardinals all day, every day. He is obsessed with people asking people, what's your walk-up song? So I am curious, Warren, if you could have a walk-up song, what would your walk-up song be right now?
Well, it's so funny. I love so many different songs and different things that, my playlist is just really eclectic. But I will say, when I first got this job and I got announced by Mayor Bibb about a year ago, I as part of my speech, ended the speech with all I do is win, win, win. And so if I do my walk up song, it wouldn't be about me winning, but it'll be about our kids winning. And so that is something that runs in my mind. And it's just like, let's win. Let's get this win going.
That's a great hype song. All right. Last question. You're surrounded by so many great leaders. You know, we've got a lot of mutual friends who we both admire together. And I'm just curious, has there been a piece of leadership advice that's been given to you or that you've come across recently that really hit you in your heart that you've been thinking about a lot lately that you could share with our listeners?
Yeah. I hear so many just different gems, jewels, and nuggets all the time. There's a local pastor that's here when I met with him, and he's also he used to practice law. There was something he shared with me when I was going through a really challenging time and trying to figure out how to navigate here. And what he shared a couple of things, but one of the things he shared was that sometimes when you're trying to go with logic, and I tend to be like a head person, like, oh, you know, head, you can miss the mark. If you think sometimes you can win the argument, if we're saying an argument, but if you could state your case just by going through logic and facts, it's not always right. And you have to really think from the heart and tapping into that. And so I know earlier you said the head and heart. And so I would say for any leader, it's not always just about having the facts and figures and everything ready. But really, how are you speaking to people and how are you bringing people along? And so that was something that was really important to me. And then the other thing, I think I just continue to learn on a daily basis, which is something that I've shared before, that this work is not about us as individuals, but about the work we're trying to accomplish collectively together. And for whatever, wherever you are, whatever piece of leadership you're doing, if you can get yourself closely connected to the why, to the people, where you can ground yourself and remind yourself of why you're doing the work and the importance of the work you're doing, it'll quickly give you the energy and the motivation you need to keep going.
This is a huge blessing. Thank you for making time, especially in the middle of your work week and your work day. I miss you, man. I appreciate you making time to be here with us today and wish you the best.
Man, thank you so much. And yeah, appreciate your leadership.